Page 662, Pasuk Yutes. Okay, last week we discussed at great length the concept as chukesi teshmeru, the illogical mitzvahs, the engraved concept of mitzvahs, and all that. So we're going to go further. What are the illogical mitzvahs that the Torah is speaking about? The Torah says like this. It speaks about forbidden mixtures. And as we said last week, we just began, that normally two positives don't make a negative, right? Yet, here, two things which are kosher, if you put them together, they become not kosher. Like it's going to say two types of animals, or your field cannot plant mixture of different things and so on. Okay, what are they? Behem tocholei sabir kalayim. You're not allowed to breed two species of animals, whether it's domestic or wild animals, behem or chai, it doesn't matter. Any one of these species cannot be bred together. By the way, the offshoot of it, though, is allowed to be used. The Torah doesn't say you can't use it. The Torah says you're not allowed to breed it. But like, so you can have a mule, which is a horse and a donkey, so you're allowed to use a mule. You can't just do it, but you can use it. You're not allowed to plant your fields mixed seeds. Okay, you can't have mixed seeds unless if they're actually separated by a fence or 6 feet apart. Baged kalayim shatnes, and a garment which is made of wool and linen together. Layala lecha, you should not put it upon you. Okay, this is the literal meaning of the pasuk. Now, the commentators ask a few interesting questions over here. Number one, the Medrash over here uses the expression like this. The Torah uses the word behem techa, your animal you cannot mix breed. So the Medrash says, how do I know somebody else's animal? Maybe I cannot do it if I own it. How do I know I'm not allowed to do it if somebody else owns it? So it says, as chukaisai, the Medrash says, you have to keep my mitzvahs anyway. That's what the mitzvah. So the Arachayim explains, so why does the Torah use the word behem techa, your animal? The Torah should have said very simple, behema lo sabir kalayim, an animal do not mix breed. Why does the Torah use the word your animal you cannot mix breed? The Torah should have said don't mix breed an animal. So he says like this, why is the Torah telling it to you? He says like this, we just got through learning, and this explains the connection between the previous pasuk, v'ahavta kamecha. The previous pasuk says, love your neighbor as yourself, and then the Torah says, don't mix your animals. Right? Like, what's the connection? So it says like this. The Arachayim HaKadosh explains, because Hashem commanded people to be united, avas Yisrael, to love another person, so I would think, okay, so why should God mind breeding animals? It's also avas animals, not Tavis Yisroel, but it's love of animals. Why can't we breed them together? So the Torah says, Behem techa, even if it's your animals that you're allowed to eat, you also can't breed it. In other words, the Arachayim HaKadosh is explaining, why is the Torah using the word Behem techa to tell me that even if it's a kosher animal that you would be allowed to eat, you still cannot breed it together, even though we just learned in the Chumash that Hashem enjoys when there's unity between people, and for that matter, seemingly between animals or anything like that. So therefore, the Torah says it's forbidden. Now, there's a difference, though, between wheat and grapes, which is called klai akedem. If somebody mixes wheat and grapes together without a proper separation, not only is it forbidden to do, that mixture is forbidden to eat from. Not only is it forbidden to eat from, you can't even benefit from the mixture. But that's only wheat and grapes together. All the other mixing and breeding of fruit seeds, you're not allowed to do. But if it's done, you can eat it, and if it's kosher, obviously, then you're allowed to do it. So this is the thing. You can't mix animals. You can't plant your field kalayim. And then he says, "Ubeged kalayim shatnes." If it's shatnes, you cannot. But the Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to wear it. So what does the Torah say? Lo yala alecha, You cannot put it upon yourself. And here the Torah is teaching us another law. When it comes to wearing shatness, even if you don't wear it, let's say a blanket, okay, that's shatness, and you're just covering yourself with it, you're not wearing the blanket, it's still forbidden. The Torah says, lo yalo alecha, you cannot bring it upon you. So it's forbidden, even not if you're not actually wearing it. Or for that matter, the Gemara says, and the Halacha says, if you have a cushion, let's say a couch, that's made out of, not leather couch, a couch made out of material, and there's wool and linen in the material of the couch, you can't sit on the couch either.
You don't know. You're in an office, and it's like a linen or...
Well, most couches today...
No, but there are a lot where I go...
They tell there are many tzaddikim, that they didn't go in the olden times in Europe. Many of the carriages, the seats of the carriages, actually had shatness in them. And they tell stories about many gedolim that they only went in special carriages where they knew what the seats were made out of, and or they had their special seats and they took out the other seats. There was, there's a lot of inyanim of shatness that the Torah speaks about that people aren't aware of. You know, you go buy a suit, you need to check it for shatness. My wife was just discussing at Shaloshudas last week.
Yeah? She
bought a skirt in the store, on sale, of course. What else is new? Big mitzia. Big excitement. Right? The excitement is you get something on a big, bargain. That's the excitement. Forget the skirt, forget the money. It's a bargain. Doesn't matter what it is. Anyway, beautiful, everything great, yeah? She takes it home. I don't know why. She just looked at the material thing. Yeah. 30% linen, 18% wool. Mamish, shatness.
Lining silk.
Mamish, linen, not lining. Like 13% linen, 18% wool. Mamish, real shatness.
But the wool is not from wool.
It's not. It's still wool. It's still considered wool. And then there was a number of years ago, for those that play baseball, some of the Wilson's gloves, baseball mitts.
Yeah, the lining.
So most people here know soccer, not baseball. But the baseball mitts, there was a Wilson gloves, had shatness in it for a short period of time. You go rent a tuxedo, especially if they're expensive tuxedos, you will have shatness in the tuxedos. I mean, these are all things that people in Bechal have to be very careful about. Even though we learned shatness is a real chayk, a real illogical mitzvah, but it's interesting, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs says reasons for certain mitzvahs that the Torah doesn't say reasons for. Like the Rambam writes, we're soon going to learn about not shaving with a razor, you can't shave your beard with a razor, your hair, the corners of your hair. The Rambam writes, or shatness also, the Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvahs that the priests of old, that was their garments that they wore. Wool and linen together. Some other commentators explain another beautiful, I think it's Daskin Malatesis, or one of the Mefarshim I remember say that another reason for shatness, again, the Torah says that's it, but after the Torah says, you try to find reasoning for it. The first murder that took place in Torah was because of wool and linen. Cain and Hevel, Sirashi says, Hevel brought from the sheep, which is wool, and Kayin brought Mipriho Adama, and Rashi says from the Medrash, it was linen, flax or linen. So Kayin brought linen, and Hevel brought wool. Hashem accepted Hevel's, not Kayin, so Kayin killed Hevel, right? As everybody else. Cain and Abel, right? So, the first murder came about because of wool and linen. So they say, Hashem said, you know what, I don't want wool and linen in the same garment. It was not a good recipe, not a good common thing to have together, wool and linen together. But the bottom line is, the Torah says, it's shatness and that's it. There's no other reason for it besides the fact that the Torah says it.
Robin,
what?
Kohen Gadol was wearing shatness.
Oh, not only the Kohen Gadol. The Avnate, the Gartel, that the Kohenim wore in the Beis HaMikdash, had shatness in it. And that's why, but the same God that said no shatness said, this is shatness. Right? Because Hashem told him how to make the avnet, the gartel, was made out of six different materials. Sheish, vargaman, and it was woolen, you know, all those things. So it was interesting, halacha. The gartel was very long. It was 32 amas long. It was very long. They wrapped it, wrapped it, wrapped it. The din was, they couldn't use it when they weren't working. They wanted to take a nap. The kohen wanted to take a snooze. And they wanted to get a pillow. They were not allowed to lay on the gartel because they weren't serving now in the Beis HaMikdash. And that would be shatnes, so they wouldn't be allowed to wear it or lay on it. But you're right, the gartel was shatnes, the kohen gadol was shatnes, but the Torah said that was the material that they had to bring. There's another interesting halacha, which is also not done today, but in Parshas Ki Tse, later on in Chumash, the Torah says, don't wear shatnes. And then the Torah says, G'dilim tasalacha. You have to make tzitzis. Okay? And the Gemara learns, why does the connection between shatnes and tzitzis? That technically tzitzis could be shatnes. And you would be allowed to wear it. For instance, if you have a wool garment and linen tzitzis. Or linen garment and wool, not cotton, linen. And wool tzitzis. And it's tied together, and it's connected, it's one garment. So technically, you would be allowed to wear shatnes and tzitzis. Halacha says, why is it practically not done? Because if you wear the tzitzis at night, then there's no real mitzvah of tzitzis, then you'd be wearing shatnes. So it's not done, you know, for whatever reason, in case the tzitzis become non-kosher, now you're still stuck with linen and wool. So in a practical sense, it's not done today. But wool and linen would technically be allowed for tzitzis, and in the, for the kind of the Beis HaMikdash they weren't. You're allowed to benefit from shatnez. You're allowed to sell it. In fact, there's a din. If can a salesperson, years ago, didn't have stores like we have today with racks and all that. Salespeople would wear the clothing, and then you see, this is it. This was the showcase. This was the dummy. Now they hang them on dummies. Then it was live dummies. Huh? Dummy sounds better. It doesn't matter. So the shaila was, could they wear it to show, because they're not wearing it to wear it? In fact, there's a whole shaila. Can you go to the store and try on a suit, right? Before you buy it and check it for shatness, you try it on, no? Don't you see if it fits or not? So are you allowed to try on a suit? Maybe it has shatness. So the answer is because it's only a doubt. It might be rabbinic shatness. See, there's all machlokes Rambam and Rosh about shatness. What is biblical shatness? What is rabbinic shatness? According to certain opinions, it needs to be woven in the material. The material itself needs to be woven, wool and linen together, to make it real shatness. Some people, for instance, in men's suits, the shatness is in the collar. In the collar, so it's not actually part of the material of the suit, but it's sewed onto the suit. So the question is that biblical, is that rabbinic shatness? You know, what exactly does the Torah mean when it speaks about shatness? But they're right, so you could try on a suit or dress or whatever it may be to see if it is the shatness or not.
A lot of Italian ties.
A lot of the Italian stuff is shatness. Yeah. A lot of the Italian suits, they're very expensive. The junky suits usually don't have shatness. The expensive Italian suits, you know, many of them will have real shatness.
Did you say you could sell shatness?
It's not forbidden to benefit from. You can't wear it. The Torah says, loyal alecha.
So if you have a store and there's Jews that are walking in and you're selling shatness to them, it's...
No, they're going to another shat that we discussed already.
Oh,
can you assist somebody to sin? You're here.
That's true, but I'm just saying, you said you're allowed to sell.
Yeah, you can benefit from shatness. Can you sell it to a guy?
You can sell pork, you know. I mean,
technically, you could sell pork. The Torah says, pork is not forbidden to benefit from. The Torah says you should make a living from selling pork.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you a little secret. You know a slaughterhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah? Not all the animals end up kosher. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? What do they do with all the trade fat? Let's say they shecht 100 animals. Okay? Many times it's not such a high percentage of kosher. Forget glatt, I'm saying even kosher. Let's say 50-50. 50 is kosher, 50 is treif, which is not an absurd proportion. What does the company do with the 50% treif for animals that they killed? Can they benefit from it? Or they have to give it away for free?
It's a cow, it's not pork.
Yeah.
No, but it's treif.
It's
treif. You can't, a Jew, technically, is not allowed to own a treif for slaughterhouse, even if it's cows. You can't own a treif for slaughterhouse because it's all treif, and that's your prime occupation. Okay, but again, but you could play football, it's called pigskin, you know that?
Mm-hmm.
If the real footballs are made out of pigskin. Yeah. You could wear a pigskin belt, yeah,
jackets.
Purses. You can even have a chazer flu. Not forbidden. Swine flu.
Oh, swine flu.
A tie is also wearing. If it's shotness, you can't wear it. Most of the ties, unless, again, like we said, the very expensive Italian ties, maybe. But it's 100%. Huh?
Silk and linen.
Well, yeah, silk is not linen. Linen is linen. Okay.
Isn't that something like the couches you sit on? It's only because it comes up around you a little
bit. Not necessarily. If it gives warmth, if it gives warmth, it's very possible. Okay, that's the... Yeah.
The wool is only for the sheep or for only any animals when we say wool?
Wool could be wool from goats or sheep.
Wool?
I want camel. Camel.
I don't think camel, but I don't know. I don't know all this, whatever. I don't know. Okay, one more thing. The Ramban writes over here, one of the explanations of why Hashem doesn't want mixed animals and mixed... Hashem says, listen, I made nature, separate animals, separate seeds, keep it that way. Don't mix it to my business, you know. I made things a certain way, let's leave it that way. And that's it. Okay, now the Pasuk says like this. V'ish ki yishka v'yitzish yishich v'zera. If a man has relations with a woman who is a slave, nechrefes li'ish, that's designated for another man, but havdele niftasi, she wasn't redeemed yet, or her freedom was not given to her. There should be an investigation. Lo yumsu, they shouldn't die. This is a very unique din. Okay? You gotta listen to this. This is a doozer din. A Jewish. Okay, let's put it up. When a Jew buys a non-Jewish slave, when slavery was allowed, if a Jew bought a non-Jewish slave, whether it was male or female, okay, they were a goy, okay? But if it was a male slave, they gave him a bris, and he had all the laws, he was obligated in all the mitzvahs women were obligated in, meaning all the negative commandments, any mitzvah not connected in time. Okay, he was Jewish, partially Jewish, but, and he was obligated in all the mitzvahs that women were obligated in. If the slave became freed, this goyish slave, he became a full-fledged Jew. That's the halacha.
But what if he didn't?
And the Gemara tells us, one second. The Gemara tells a story, Rabbi Elazar, to show the importance of davening with a minyan. Rabbi Elazar walked into a shul, there were 9 Jews, he walked in with his goyish slave, but he couldn't be counted for a minyan because women can't be counted for a minyan. So he freed the slave to have the 10th Jew to be able to daven with a minyan. That's how important davening with a minyan is, even though it's really technically transgressing a positive mitzvah if you free a slave. Okay? The same thing applies. Now, if the guy didn't want, so the Rambam says, from the Gemara, you negotiate with him for 12 months to do a bris and, you know, accept mitzvahs. If after 12 months he still refuses, you got to let him go free. But then he's not a Jew because he never accepted it. The same thing is if you buy a non-Jewish woman as a slave. She goes to the mikveh, in fact. She becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs of a woman. If she ever becomes free, then she goes out full-fledged Jewess. That's the simple din. Now, what happens if, like it was in the olden times, people owned slaves in partnership? What happens if 2 Jews owned a non-Jewish slave? And then, so they had a din, like this half Jew, so to speak. Funny expression. What happens if one partner frees his slave? So now the guy is half slave, half free. That's the case, right? Two people own a slave. One frees him, and the other one doesn't. So now he's half slave, half free. So concerning a male slave like that, there's an interesting argument in the Gemara Barbasu between Beishami and Beisilu. One of them says, well, what does he do? He works one day, he's off a day. Works a day, works. Because he's half free, half slave, right? So how do you do a half slave, half free? You make him work a day, half a day, the next day he's free. Then work free, work free.
The day he's free, he goes to the minion? Or?
No, 1 second. So, the other opinion says, so the Gemara says, Bab Basra. So the Gemara said, the other opinion says, what are you doing? Takantes rabbi, but ves atzmele takante. The Gemara says, you worked out a deal for the master that he has him working every other day. But the slave is stuck. He can't marry a Jewish girl because he's half slave. He can't marry a slave because he's half Jewish. So he's like, and the Gemara says, and the world was created to procreate. So what do you do with such a slave? So the opinion says, and this is the halacha, you force the other master to free him and he becomes a full-fledged free. Okay? Now, what happens if this din is applied to a woman? So if you see, if you have these chumashim, okay, look on page 663, which says, on the left column at the bottom, 20 to 22. Okay? Here he explains it very clearly. This unusual decree is unlike any other commandment in several ways. Briefly, as elucidated by our sages, the first deals with a non-Jewish slave woman owned by two partners. As a slave, she was forbidden to live with a Jew, but her master was allowed to have her live with a Jewish or non-Jewish slave. That's the halacha we learned in Mishpat. When a Jewish-owned non-Jewish slave goes free, he or she automatically has the status of a full-fledged Jew, full-fledged get. Now, this woman is freed by one of her masters, meaning that she is half free and half slave. Because she is made half free, she is prohibited to be with a non-Jewish slave. But because she's still half slave, she is prohibited to an Israelite. Right? She's like, as the Gemara uses, bold in both ways. Now a Jew, slave or free, marries her. What happens now? This woman, who's half slave and half free, marries a Jewish man. But now, is this woman a completely married woman? Okay? She's half slave, half free, right? And a Jewish man marries her. Now, she's not a full married woman because she's still half slave. Right? So she's a half married woman. Right? Because there's no kedusha by a slave. Right? But she's half free. So when a regular Jew comes over to a woman slave who's half free and half slave, and he gets married to her, she's only half married. What happens if somebody commits adultery with her? Another man now commits adultery with this half slave, half free, who married a Jew. Okay? So, she's not a full-fledged married woman because she's half slave. So she's not half married. So the Torah says, what's the din? So the din is, if a Jew lives with her, both of them are aware of the sin. Her penalty is lashes. She has to get malchus, and he has to bring a carbon. Okay? Because she's not a full-fledged married woman, you can't kill the guy that lives with her, commits adultery with her because she's not full-fledged married. So she gets whipped, and the guy that did it has to bring a carbon. Now let's see the pasuk inside. Ish ki yishka v'sisha shich v'zera. If a man lives with a woman, this is about the new Jew, the last Jew. V'yishivcha necherefes lish, she was a maidservant designated for a man, meaning she married a Jew, but she wasn't freed completely, or her freedom was not given to her completely. In other words, half slave, half free, married to a Jewish man, commits adultery with another Jewish man. So the Torah says, Bikeiris means she needs to be an investigation, meaning she doesn't get death. Lo yumsa, she doesn't get killed. Kilechufsha, because she doesn't get because she wasn't completely freed. Okay, so the Torah says Vehevi is Hashem el Hashem. He has to bring his korban el Pesach el Meir to the door of the el Meir el Hashem. He has to bring a ram. Vechiper all of Akoyin and the Kohen will forgive him. Be'el Hashem l'fnei Hashem with this ram before Hashem. Achatos es shechata on the sin that he sinned. V'nisach lein will be forgiven. Mechatos es shechata from the sin that he sinned. Okay? So the Gemara learns a number of dinim from here. Bikaitis tihia means an investigation, but the Gemara learns it also means lashes. But for the men to get Malkus Erev Yom Kippur, you know, the symbolic lashes, he says, you say the pasuk v'hud achim yechaper ovim v'lo yashchis. Okay? In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when a guy got real lashes, like the Singapore ones, not the American ones, the Singapore ones of old, okay. So, the guy got beat. I mean, doctors had to evaluate the patient, how much he's able to handle. So the din was, when the Kohen whipped him, or not the Kohen, the Shliach of Bezdin's agent whipped him, he would read the pasuk, and he would also read it. The guy that got hit and the guy that got hit. So Gemara said, where do we learn that out from? From the word bikaitis. Bikaitis comes from the word kara, to read. Comes the word kara, to read. So from there they learn out that Malkus, okay, the head of the court recites the papsukim that deal with the punishment of lashes. That's what we learn from Bikaitis. Okay, that's the bottom line. Okay, this is very impractical din. Let's go to the next one. Kisavei la'aretz, when you will come to the land, when etatem kol eitz marchol, by the way, this din coming up is an extremely practical din today. When you will come to the land, when etatem kol eitz marchol, you will plant any fruit tree, v'arauta marlase yes piriyai, you should treat its fruit as forbidden, shalosh shanim yilocha arelim, 3 years it should be forbidden, lo yeyachol, you cannot eat it. Not only you cannot eat it, the Gemara learns out, you cannot even benefit from it. This then is as follows. It's called Arla. Arla means, and the Torah speaks about Eretz Yisrael because biblically it applies only in Eretz Yisrael, biblically. And that is when you plant a tree, you're not allowed to eat the fruits for the first 3 years. And as we'll see in the next psukim, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the fourth year, they had to take the fruit and eat it in Yerushalayim. Or if it was too much to carry, they exchanged it for money, carried the money to Yerushalayim, and bought food in Yerushalayim to eat. And the fifth year, the fruit is all yours. Okay? This doesn't apply to vegetation. This only applies to trees. Biblically, even in the land of Israel. Only in the land of Israel. Rabbinically, the laws of Arla apply in Chutz La'aretz too, outside of Eretz Yisrael. The din is, it goes the 3 years from the time of planting, not from the time it bears fruit. Because many trees, you plant a tree, it takes a few years until the actual tree grows without the fruit. But where you have a practical din, by the way, and this happens many, many times today, if you buy a tree from a nursery that already is bearing fruits, and you bring it home and replant it in the ground, you have to wait another 3 years. If you have a fruit tree in your backyard, and you're building over there, and you're moving your fruit tree a little bit away, you have to start another 3 years. Now, when does the 3 years begin? So even though Tu B'Shvat is a new year for trees, that is completely different din. The Mishnah says at the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, for Arla, Rosh Hashanah Tishrei is the new year of trees. Of Arla. Which means like this, and this is a very practical din. The Gemara learns out, without getting into the details of how the Gemara learns it out, If you plant a tree 45 days before Rosh Hashanah, 45 days before Rosh Hashanah or more, or earlier, then as soon as Rosh Hashanah comes, year two starts.
If you have proof.
No, from the planting.
Well, you need to have 3 years of fruit.
No, that's what I'm saying. Even if there's no fruit. You plant a tree, for first 3 years, you're not allowed to eat the fruit. What happens if the fruit comes 5 years later? Fine, so then when it comes, you can eat it. The practical case of it, if you replant the tree,